Morning, everybody. Well, I'm glad Clive is done because I don't want to do any mathematical modeling this morning. I didn't have enough coffee to figure that out. Little departure here, just a little advertisement for the society. Don't forget, now, we do have a food processing applicability, and the journal is starting to publish those papers, so you don't have to send everything to Journal of Food Science, okay? So we're going to talk a little bit about pomegranates and make a not from concentrate juice. And as many of you should be aware that all the superfruits and all the healthy buzzes of antioxidants, everything in the industry, and all the new research coming out in vivo, in vitro, and very few but starting clinical trials starting to show that many of the compounds in a lot of our superfruits are actually having extremely good healthy benefits in our diets. Bioavailability and all that's still an issue. Nonetheless, the marketers and the companies are taking advantage of this and marketing en masse lots of these products, and the consumers are buying in and swallowing it up, and the production's going up, the consumption's going up. But the polyphenolics and anthocyanins, which are the causal compounds for all these great benefits, there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of knowledge still lacking regarding astringency, bitterness, flavor issues, whether or not they're monomers, dimers, polymers, etc., how they get into the body and where they go in the gut and how they affect bioavailability and the actual nutritional status. But there's also other quality problems with the relation to flavor volatiles and how these things interact with each other as well. So my team is looking at some of these things. But, you know, if you got superfruits, it's a win-win situation, and you can go to Gotham City and fly away with funding, hopefully, right? So, as you can see on the grocery shelves these days, these products are being sold en masse, and they are taking over many sections of many grocers' refrigerated displays. Just as a little ancillary note, it's nice to know the majority of these products are shelf-stable. They could be on the unrefrigerated shelf, and they'd be fine. But they're on the fresh-looking shelf to draw the consumer in that it's more fresh. And obviously, they will last longer refrigerated, but they don't even need to be there. So there's been no reports, to the best of my knowledge, on not from concentrate pomegranate juice quality. And so I've been focusing in my lab on not from concentrate juices, pomegranates, blueberries, satsumas. Just had a Satsuma article, food processing, in the journal, I think, this month, at one of the first groups of the food processing articles. So one of the objectives here is to kind of rapidly survey the flavor, important compounds, and quality measures, including the anthocyanin backbone compounds. It's easier to quantify. There's way too many anthocyanins through all the different polymerizations in cumarol and glucosylation events. So we try to keep it simple, and we hydrolyze our samples and just look at the backbones. And we're going to hopefully amass this all statistically, and I still didn't get that done, but we'll nonetheless present what we have. So we use commercial pomegranates from Paramount Farms, shipped and sent directly to the lab overnight, freighted. We resort, culled, and washed and dried. Each pressing run, we ran around 80 kilograms of fruit, so it was not small scale. We did the full pressing and the ultrafiltration with two full different experiment repeats, and then we had residual juice that we actually left for a third repeat to go through pasteurization and carry through the rest of the analysis. We filter our juice on a system in the pilot plant that's very similar to an industrial application, with the actual filtration membranes that you would find in a commercial fruit facility. We pasteurize on a very standard milk pasteurization or a lab pasteurization pilot plant unit. And we store them in glass culture bottles because we can reuse them and reduce, reuse, recycle, and keep them sterile. So this is kind of an overall scheme of the potential juice processing and sampling. So the numbered bullets make it a little easier, and you'll see in a second when the little ovals come up, this is kind of the path that we follow. We avoid as much of the enzyme and the clarification and the bentonite and all these different compounds that drop out and settle, and sedimentation issues, by performing ultrafiltration instead. You can skip the ultrafiltration if you want and have more of a smoothie-like product, but nonetheless, we flash pasteurize it, and we've also produced concentrates, and then we bottle and store, and we assess the quality. And those attributes would be generally the color, the bricks, the pH, the TA. We do the volatiles by headspace, solid phase, microextraction, the triple fiber or the stable flex with GCMS. The focus was originally placed on a suite of over 80 compounds, narrowed down to 50-ish, narrowed down to more around 20 based on recent publications out of Israel in Porat's lab indicating that there's around 21. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the end of the talk. We've also measured the organic acids because of acidity issues and relation to the phenolics as well. And then the anthocyanidins by UPLC. So here's just a little snippets of what it looks like in the pilot plant. That's the press. That's the and we all wear the nets and all that because the sensory panel gets this stuff too. So we have to do it under a good manufacturing practices, standard operations and procedures, and making sure that we follow as many critical control points of the HACCP regime as possible known to man. So the sensory panelist leader doesn't want the panelist dying, so we don't want that liability. I don't think you would either. So right here, where's that mouse? Anyone see it? Okay, there we go. So that's the ultrafiltration skid unit with the membrane in it, and there's the hopper. And this is what happens if you let a milk clamp vibrate itself loose. You have really nice colorful floors. So you can do new designs with colors with these fruits, too. And there's the end product coming out, the filtration unit. So there's another snippet. We wash resorts fruit, and the culture bottles are the ones that are stored, and these are all of our samples for the analytical. And then we're a happy little team, and we like to have fun in the lab, too. So it was Mardi Gras time, or the Saints were playing or something. So I'm in all my Saints garb at work every day. So I like to have fun. Got to keep life interesting, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about the results. And at first, I'll just give it to you in text, and then we'll run through the graphs really quick. We did some work, showed the color differences. Looked at the bricks differences. Titratable acidity didn't vary much. However, the bricks did vary. Therefore, the ratio and the bricks to titratable acidity did indeed vary as well. And as you'll see, the anthocyanidins decreased massively after pasteurization. So if you look at the color here, this is what the original color would be in a Good Nature press, followed by ultrafiltration, which is almost always a drop in color because obviously you saw that hopper tank. It's actually concentrating as you're filtering because you're pulling stuff out that's going to be your retentate that becomes your bottled product. So the pasteurization and then held at 4 degrees. The pasteurization held at 25 degrees. So not much color differentiation with lightness. A little bit more so with color differentiation with after pasteurization with the A value, so you can see after storage it drops and the 4 degrees drops and stays low. And then the 25 degrees, actually, we did end up having some problems microbiological, which could have affected some of the data, so I don't even show you the 3-month data. And then the B value drops again at 4 degrees. But these are subtle and very small drops. If you'll notice these units, these values on the Minolta color scale are very large. And these are actually, I didn't run stats on them yet, but I know some of these will end up being significantly different. These are fully repeated experiment. It's either twice or three times with N equals 6 or 9. It depends on where we were in the process, how many samples we got. Again, this is the bricks, very slight decrease in storage out to 2 months at 4 degrees, and a marked 1-month drop in the warmer temperature, yet it stabilizes off. and then again, the ratio mimics that because it's pretty much calculated and predominantly controlled by the bricks number in that calculation. So the organic acids, the predominant load of the acids was made up by citric acid, and if you look at the 4 degree versus citric versus total, and again the citric versus total at 25, you can see that the curves almost mimic each other. There was a very slight increase in total and citric acid overstorage, and I'm not exactly sure how or why that increased, but that's what the data show. At 25, I don't understand why it goes up and comes back down, and if anyone has any ideas for that, I'll listen to you. Anthocyanidins, the data is not shown, but what happened with the anthocyanidins is the Good Natured Press value would, of course, been my control base value, the first number you have. It actually increased upon ultrafiltration because we're actually concentrating, and there's polymerization that's probably already starting to occur. But then upon pasteurization, and specifically thereafter, marked decreases all anthocyanidins and all temperatures and all storage times. So the question is, well, you're losing your anthocyanidins. Well, remember, that's the backbone compound. That doesn't have all the glucoses stuck to it, the chumeral group stuck to it, the acetyl group stuck to it, and all the polymerized forms. That's a lot more complicated work. We're actually still running those data on an LC-MS-MS system, and God only knows if we'll ever do that because the libraries don't exist for most of those compounds still. So what we're looking also at is volatiles. We integrated and targeted about 35 of them. Several of the compounds increased upon pasteurization, and you'll see that in a second. But then generally, most of the important compounds seem to decrease markedly in bottles and during the storage. A couple of compounds that are known to be bad, if they get at too high of a concentration, ethanol and octanol increase only at 25. So like I mentioned earlier, 4 degrees, obviously if you chill it and hold it chilled, it's better. Beta-damasinone and others like 2,4-dibutylphenol increase, and this compound, we don't really know what the heck it's doing and what it is, so we still have to figure that out. And we have a couple more like that. But a lot of other compounds that are in the consensus compounds and a few additional ones generally drop off. So if you look at pasteurization across the board here, you'll see that these are generally your higher numbers in any column for many of the compounds, like the six carbons. They are considered oxidative compounds, but nonetheless, in many of our fruits and vegetables, these are actually flavor important as well, so long as they're not saturating. And they do drop off in pasteurization. Paracimine and many of the terpenes, terpenoids that are actually important in citrus and many of your other crops, and the berries are also important in the pomegranates, also drop off. The limonene is the highest to pasteurization, drops off markedly. You can see these numbers. Many of the compounds, terpenoids, are basically gone. And like we have a few like this one, they're not detected until you bottle. And we don't have problems with any plastics or anything like that in our system. So I'm not sure where this compound is coming from and what it is. So in conclusion, the color, like you saw in the Minolta, is not so pronounced, yet anthocyanin and DINs decrease massively during storage, but it's also known that polymerization of these compounds can lead to other compounds, and they maintain their color functionality. So it's kind of hard to tease these things out. Out of the consensus compounds that were recovered, the majority of them decreased substantially during the storage after pasteurization and during storage. But there's also a little bit of a problem in that 21 consensus compounds in the literature, I don't necessarily agree with all their compounds because they also include many Israeli and Spanish cultivars when they're looking at them, and there's different backgrounds, different actual genetic lines giving rise to different compounds, and I've got literally a handful of compounds that I'd like to add to that list from Wonderful. But they do decrease, and we're trying to get a grip on this because empirically, over 2 to 3 years in our lab, making not from concentrate pomegranate juices, hands down, they are 10 times better than anything on the market. So what's on the market in many other juices, and adulteration studies are starting to come out also now, is that there's additives. Many of the companies, they will put flavor on their label. Many will not, because it might have come from the condensing column of that product somewhere during the pasteurization and or concentration of making concentrates. They will recapture it and introduce it in mixing tanks before bottling, but that will never be on your label. And so if you flavor and taste commercial products, they might not taste like a blueberry or a pomegranate or the citrus that you think it should be. But if you taste a not from concentrate, truly fresh juice, wow, is it ever different. So that's my take-home message. Any questions?
My concern is the lots of antioxidants
that was excluded. Well, no, that's not true. Because the antioxidants, though, in the literature, it's very few articles are pointing out and saying the antioxidant is a backbone anthocyanin. No. It's mostly polymerized compounds. And then also, like the quercetin, the gallic acid, the epicatechins, the smaller compounds, once the phenolic is already broken down. But that occurs in here. So that doesn't really matter, to tell you the truth. But if you polymerize these and end up with huge oligomers, the body can't do them anyway. So it's a moot point. Any others?
Am I correct that you were testing these samples for up to 3 months at maximum? Is that right?
Yeah, we did the sampling out to 3 months at both temperatures stored.
Pomegranates are harvested once a year in October, November. Mm-hmm. So if you bought pomegranate juice at the store right now, it would be 9 or 10 months old. Do you have plans to?
No, you bought juice that was made from concentrate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, many of our labels in the industrial, wonderful world are lies. They are actually not from concentrate. They are not from concentrate. They will say that, but it goes way back to the citrus industry where the big companies had the legislation written by the FDA to allow almost anything known to man happen to that product. And it is actually concentrated. Don't get me wrong. There are huge storage tanks in Florida that are full of not-from-concentrate juice under refrigeration at 4 degrees or lower with liquid nitrogen cooling systems. There are definitely not-from-concentrate juices, but there are many of them out there that the labels are a lie as well. So, yeah, anything you get now. I mean, these Tetra Paks are shipped worldwide, concentrates. Look at the bottle. Fruit juice may come from Indonesia, China, Malaysia, Brazil, whatever. Well, that's concentrate.
You buy Palm Wonderful today in the store. Is that from concentrate?
Unless that label from Palm Wonderful says not from concentrate, and like you really need to know the process. Yes, they are from concentrate. There's just a few companies now, like Sunny Gem, starting to do not from concentrate, but they can't offer it year round. Unless they're going to store it like they do in Florida with those million-dollar operations. Well, billion probably, right? Yeah. So, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.